we can become habitual likers and dislikers of something which is quite illusory. Now, for instance, people in this country and in Europe generally appreciate cheese, especially in France. I think de Gaulle made the remark, how can you govern a country that's got 173 different kinds of cheeses? Well, they admire cheese and the different varieties of it. But to a traditional Japanese, the cheese is food that's gone bad. It's rotten. And they're absolutely, they used to be, they're getting used to it now, but they're absolutely revolted by these Westerners stuffing this rotten food into their mouth, food that's gone bad, putting it in and then claiming to enjoy it. And towards the beginning of the century, anything foreign used to be called cheesy. And it was claimed that foreigners tended to smell of cheese. Well, we think, oh, how ridiculous. Cheese is very nice. But when we are in turn offered in a very expensive Chinese restaurant eggs which are a year old, they're purple. Hard-boiled eggs a year old. And they're taken out of their shells, and they're sort of purple and grey. And somehow you don't much care for it. And the Chinese have said, go on, he says, go on, lovely. Well, if you can bring yourself to eat it a little bit, it's not bad at all. But we're rather revolted by this idea, an egg a year old. Well, these likes and dislikes are something which are simply, we can see in a sense that they're illusory, but nevertheless they're quite strong. Now, Shankara makes the point about the world. He says the achievements and the gains of the world and the successes of the world are like food mixed with poison. You eat the food and it's sweet. It's a word for an Indian sweet, which is mostly honey. It's sweet, but there is poison in it. So you enjoy the sweetness, and then later on, the poison hits you. Now, he says, in quoting the verse from the Gita, that desire for and indulgence in the objects of the senses is the enemy, the constant enemy of the wise man. But it's only the final enemy of the ignorant man. The ignorant man first thinks this is a friend, and he gulps down the sweet food. Later on, he knows it was an enemy. But the wise man, the man who knows, rather, although eating the food, he knows it contains poison. So that even although it's sweet, and he tastes the sweetness of it, that sweetness is contaminated by the knowledge that he's poisoning himself. Well, this rather far-fetched example, one would have thought, in India, has come to life now for a large number of people who, when eating food that they like, are aware that it's full of cholesterol or whatever their particular allergy as it may be, happens to be, and that they're in fact eating something that's poisoning them. But nevertheless, sometimes they go on eating it. And Sridhara says there are symptoms of this poison. He said the mind goes to a low ebb. He says if we engage our mind in property, bricks and stones, he said, or in personal conversation, then the level of the mind ebbs low. The vitality of the mind is sapped. He says, you must make your whole life a yajna, a sacrifice, to bring about yoga. And one can think, oh well, some parts, some things ought to be given up, but not everything. You have to be a bit practical. And people are quite strong on particular points and not so strong on other points. For instance, if one's made quite a lot of money by working extremely hard for it, then one thinks, well, I'm entitled to have this. I've worked for this. I've given the world exchange value for this money. This has been honestly earned. But people who, well, who've just inherited money, well, that really they ought to give up. They've done nothing for it, and that should be given up. Whereas the people who've inherited perhaps fame, famous name, they feel, no, people who work for fame, all that fame and all that wealth is based on egoism. And it's consequently the very success is a reinforcement of their egoism, and therefore that should be given up. But something that simply drops, as it were, from heaven without any planning or effort at all, that's clearly a gift from heaven, and as such it should be accepted. Well, in this way, what the other people have is clearly a candidate for being given up, whereas what we ourselves have, master of meditation in these says, what we ourselves have somehow doesn't seem a right candidate for renunciation. And he says, while we are full of desire and ambition, we are volcanoes, and nothing can live in a volcano. Now, our teacher made this point. A country like New Zealand, which is extremely fertile, is volcanic and was volcanic. And when the volcanoes have been finally subsided, the land is extremely fertile. And our teacher said, this is also a yogic truth, that people of very strong passions, when those passions are finally pacified, the soil is extremely fertile for yogic inspiration. And he made this point. He said they've got to be pacified, and the life has got to become one-pointed, but that when it does, it will be a very fertile field, and the yogic plants will grow there. Then we are marionettes, Shankara says, but we can free ourselves from being marionettes, from being whirled by the Maya of the Lord, by a method which the Lord himself gives us. And what happens then? The actions of the marionette, which are fixed and determined and repetitive, so that our lives become simply a repetition, again and again and again, the same thing. Then they can become free and creative and reflect the will of God instead of reflecting our personal will. Nobody likes to be told they're marionettes. When after a meeting somebody says, oh, well, of course, once he said that, you were bound to do that. You say, what? Oh, yes, every time he says, puts something up, you always oppose it, don't you? We all know that. We have bets on it. What? No. You say, oh, yes, there was this, and this, and this, and this, and this, wasn't there? And that's always vigorously opposed. Oh, no, no, no. Or everything he put up was very unsound. And then they sometimes produce the ace of trumps. They said, do you remember that time when he put up something and you raised an objection? You said, no, on the contrary, it's the other way around. And then he thought and he said, you know, I believe you're right. And then you immediately said, I'm wrong.